This week on Making Contact.
You know, all this CAFTA and NAFTA, this is all for the big corps in America, and this has nothing to do with the average American person.
Frequently compared to the decade-old North American Free Trade Agreement, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, or CAFTA, extends many of the same economic policies as far south as Costa Rica. Critics of CAFTA say NAFTA is responsible for high unemployment, a growing gap between the rich and poor, and massive migration from Mexico. While the Bush administration celebrates CAFTA as a leap forward, ordinary citizens from the U.S. and throughout Central America aren't so sure. On this edition, we'll take a look at the potential impacts of CAFTA. I'm Amy Pomerleau, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. On May 28, 2004, United States Trade Representative Robert Zoellick signed the Central American Free Trade Agreement on behalf of the Bush administration. Trade representatives from Costa Rica, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala were also present to sign on behalf of their countries at a ceremony held in Washington, D.C. After CAFTA was signed, the Bush administration said it would wait until after the November elections before formally submitting the agreement to Congress for a vote. Correspondent Shannon Young has more.
Manufacturing jobs with union wages vanished from the U.S. economy by the thousands over the course of the past 10 years, reappearing as low-wage positions in Mexican sweatshops along the border. These wages can sink even lower in many Central American countries. CAFTA negotiations began in January of 2003 and ended 11 months later after 9 major meetings, or rounds. Speaking in Houston in October of 2003 at the conclusion of the 8th round of negotiations, United States trade negotiator Regina Vargo said CAFTA will allow countries to enforce their own labor laws.
I guess I want to say, in our view, the most effective solutions in labor, in raising labor standards, aren't those that are imposed from the outside, but they're those that are developed from within. As countries generate a growing middle class and are able to put more resources and attention in this area.
But critics worry this self-regulation dramatically weakens worker protection currently governing trade between the U.S. and Central America. In exchange for market access, most countries are required to adhere to standards such as those set forth in the International Labor Organization conventions. For example, according to a Human Rights Watch briefing paper published in March of 2004, El Salvador's labor laws do not adequately protect the right of freedom of association or explicitly prohibit anti-union discrimination. The report also states that the CAFTA dispute resolution process is marred by loopholes that likely would substantially undermine its usefulness in many cases. As CAFTA negotiations were held behind closed doors without public participation, critics of the proposal communicated in other forums. Mayan activist Maria Domingo, with the women's organization Mama Makin, traveled from Guatemala to Houston to say that the trade negotiators have no right to put her country's natural wealth and human resources on the auction block without even consulting the general public.
And there they are, meeting in nice hotels. They don't invite us. Have any of you gone to see them in the hotel where they are? They've always done it like this, in big hotels, deciding for us, in the favor of their own wealth. They didn't ask the women of Guatemala if we want to work in their sweatshops. They didn't ask the young people. They didn't ask us. They've only bound us to a situation in which we have to work, without rights to health care. So there's been no consultation.
Domingo says that instead of packaged food or pity, what the campesinos of Guatemala need is land. However, if CAFTA is signed into law, international rights groups worry that it could have a similar impact on small farmers as the North American Free Trade Agreement. Over the past decade since NAFTA liberalized trade, thousands of Mexican subsistence farmers have found it impossible to compete against agricultural products subsidized in the United States. Salvadoran American National Network President Oscar Chacon describes this as racing against a Mercedes-Benz on a tricycle. Unable to produce at a loss, the farmers abandon their fields to find work in urban factories or to migrate to the U.S. But small farmers aren't the only ones concerned. at the sixth round of CAFTA negotiations in New Orleans during the summer of 2003, a number of Louisiana fishermen and shrimpers came out to protest the talks they say will further cripple the domestic shrimping industry. President of the United Commercial Fishermen's Association, George Barisich, says that the Gulf Coast shrimping fleet has been reduced by two-thirds over the past decade, due mostly to a dramatic drop in market prices. He says that this has had a devastating effect on the coastal communities.
Now it's getting to be such an economic disaster, not necessarily for, you know, the New Orleans area itself, but for the coastal parishes that depend. I mean, you know, every hardware store, every grocery store, the schools, you know, everybody depends on what that season produces. You know, and you'll see it. You had a good season. Everybody's houses are looking better. Boats are looking better. So that's all filtrated back into the economy. You know, bad season, everybody cuts back a little bit. But now, no matter what season you get at this price scenario, it's worthless. You know, right now, I'm getting $1.20 a pound less than I got 3 years ago. And I've got some records that I'm getting to the newspaper people from 23 years ago. All right. I got an average of 60 cents a pound more 23 years ago than I'm getting now. So you can't, you know, so something wrong here, guys, you know, because I'm going broke, you know.
Barisich points to the dumping of cheap shrimp from foreign markets as causing the drop in prices. Unlike the Gulf Coast shrimpers who net their catch in the wild, much of the imported shrimp comes from enclosed shrimp farms. President of the Louisiana Shrimp Association, A.J. Fobb, says that in addition to environmental degradation, he is concerned about the use of antibiotics and chemicals that are banned in the United States but frequently used in commercial shrimp farms in other countries.
Six major chemicals that they're being used that's not FDA approved. And it causes cancer, leukemia, and different other side effects. And we don't have it approved in the United States. But the FDA is letting it come in. And that's one of our major concerns. The American people don't realize what they're eating on one side, and on the other side is the destruction of the mangroves and the rainforest. And it's a major concern for the United States citizens.
Kimberly Chauvin and her husband have been shrimping for the past 18 years and have been struggling to stay in the trade by marketing their catches directly over the internet. Her son has been able to follow in their footsteps, becoming the fifth generation of their family to live off the wildlife available in the Gulf. However, she sees CAFTA as a threat to their small business.
You know, all this CAFTA and NAFTA, this is all for the big corps in America and overseas and stuff. This is for their governments. This has nothing to do with the average American person and the average foreign person. This is all for either government or big corporations. This does not help any small business person.
AJ Fobb says many fishermen are now unable to break even financially and are forced to leave the trade. Finding other jobs has proven difficult for many, particularly those who are closer to retirement age and whose families have been in the commercial fishing industry for generations.
At my age and a few other ones, we future night watchmen of America. Wait, well, who's going to take a 58-year-old man in retraining? And some of us here 60 and 45. I mean, Kimberly maybe might have a shot younger, but it's downhill. And that's what we're facing. And we're being put out of business by our own country. That's what's the mind-boggling situation.
Critics of CAFTA come from a variety of backgrounds and interests, including union members, students, religious workers, shrimpers, and activists. Dismissive sentiment towards the protesters was apparent in George Bush Sr.'s keynote address at a CAFTA luncheon in Houston.
We saw in Seattle, actually, where a lawless mob, I would say, they would say expressing free speech, and I'd call them anarchists. They were out there, a group of people assembled to talk about free trade and bringing trade to impoverished nations. And what do? They broke up the meeting and wouldn't let people have a chance to speak. That's not free speech, that is anarchy.
Whether or not the trade agreement can pass during an election year remains to be seen. In Houston, I'm Shannon Young for Making Contact.
In Central America, up to 70% of the population lives below the poverty line. Along with indigenous peoples, women are one of the biggest groups living in poverty. Their efforts to make ends meet have taken them to look for all sorts of jobs, ranging from selling homemade food to working in factories or maquiladoras. These factories are mass production assembly plants that export goods to richer countries for profit, while paying a low wage to Central American workers. Correspondent Luz Ruiz reports on the impacts CAFTA will have on women and the region's poor.
From their inception, maquiladoras have particularly targeted young women. The industry has a preference for hiring female workers, citing their small hands and tolerance for repetitive work deems them more qualified. Signs that read "women workers wanted" abound outside the factories, presenting themselves as the most readily available employment option for young women. Ana Maria Bravona belongs to the Nicaraguan Federation of Textile Workers and Stitch, a Washington-based network of women community and labor organizers that support women's organizing in Central America. Workers in the free trade zones of Nicaragua earn an average of $435 a year, making it the poorest country in the region.
En la federación de donde yo estoy,
I worked in a maquila in a free trade zone, and I was fired for trying to organize a union, because that's what happens. Women are scared because there's not enough jobs in our country, and when we try to organize, we are fired and we are told that we are unwanted in the factory anymore. The corporations that set up shop in the free trade zones only give work to women age 18 to 30 years old, and after that there are no more jobs. You cannot be hired. You are blacklisted by the companies.
200,000 to 300,000 illegal aliens attempt to enter the U.S. from Central America each year. Bravona talks about why Nicaraguan workers flee their country.
What we say is these are not fair trade agreements, these are fair exploitation agreements, because workers in Nicaragua are being exploited in the jobs that have been created in the free trade zones, and they're being forced to emigrate to the United States because they don't have any other choice.
Free trade zones are not new in Central America. In 1984, the Caribbean Basin Initiative was signed by the United States, 24 countries from Central America and the Caribbean. This allowed duty-free reimportation to the U.S. of clothing and other manufactured goods assembled in the Caribbean Basin. In Guatemala, the textile industry is one of the biggest sectors, producing 350 million in garments for export to the United States. 90% of the textile workers are women who are paid an average of $4 a day for an 8-hour shift.
In NB Guatemala, we produce shirts and sweatshirts for Gap and JCPenney. Hero was fired for 8 days because the owners thought we had just started to form a union, but we were already organized and had the paperwork ready, so the dismissal was illegal. Right now I am 4 months pregnant, and we also fought so I wouldn't be fired.
Wendy Lopez works at the Korean-owned MB Guatemala factory. This factory sells her processed goods to major U.S. companies like Target, JCPenney, and Gap. Lopez is also a member of the advisory board of the MB workers' newly formed union. Citra MB is one of only two other major unions that have existed since 1994 and have been working amidst death threats and intimidation. With transnational companies having so many benefits and state support, workers are oftentimes held to the whims of the owners. Vidalia Garcia, the general secretary of the MB Workers Union, says working conditions are dreadful, with minimal or non-existing safety measures, constant sexual harassment, and different salaries for men and women in the same position.
Forming the union has been a great benefit. Now, we don't allow any bad treatments, because at this factory there's a lot of discrimination. And they try to get away with all sorts of abuses. They try to fire or sanction us by cutting our salaries and things like that.
Mari Mejia from the Worker Support Center in Guatemala was fundamental in the creation of the MB Union. She fears that under CAFTA, there will be a shift in the maquila sector, bringing down all the efforts to increase worker rights, especially in rural areas.
La idea es como que las maquilas se vayan a...
We have heard that the idea is to open up factories in places like Quetzaltenango and Zacatepeque, which are far from the city. And that means that workers there do not have the same access to information than the workers in the city, to know that a labor ministry exists. And then in places like Quetzaltenango, people are very thankful that there is a factory close by, and it makes it difficult to create union conditions.
Ellos están muy agradecidos porque hay una empresa cerca de ellos.
Quetzaltenango is the biggest indigenous populated city in Guatemala, where new maquiladoras are being planned. Mayan indigenous peoples make up 60% of the population. They have been fighting for the recognition of their human rights and the implementation of the peace accord signed in 1996 after the end of almost 40 years of civil war. Rosalina Tuyuk, a Cachiquel Mayan indigenous woman who coordinates CONAVIGUA, an organization of women victims of war in Guatemala, says indigenous peoples are weary about free trade projects like CAFTA.
Toda vez que los grandes negocios...
Once the big businesses, the big investments come into the country, no information on the projects whatsoever is presented to indigenous peoples, to the communities. Primarily, any project that for many means development, for indigenous peoples signifies destruction of the environment. Then indigenous communities can't compete with them, because in order to compete, you need money, land, and training. And in these three levels, the majority of the communities are not prepared. Consequently, those who will have profits, who will be competitive, will be all those transnational companies that are sucking in cheap labor from the farmers, who from sunrise till sunset have to give their labor in exchange for the miserable wages they get paid.
A cambio de una miseria que les paga.
For Making Contact, this is Luz Ruiz in San Cristóbal de las Casas, Chiapas.
We'll have more about CAFTA in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org.
Patria culta del maíz en su contexto, con el derecho que ennoblece al corazón. Abonaré de puño y letra el compromiso para tu historia, nuestra bella tradición. Abonaré mi libertad a tus ejidos y lo lunar de mi canción intelectual. Oh patria culta del maíz, serás el ciclo, no habrá transgénico concierto artificial. Oh patria culta, limpiaré tu superficie de las políticas que dañan tu nación. Vigilaré que no comercie con la vida el sol estéril de la globalización.
In conjunction with the Central American Free Trade Agreement, a series of hydroelectric dam projects are being proposed throughout Central America in order to power the increased number of factories. Tim Russo reports on how these plants will impact rural communities.
The Electrical Interconnection System for the Countries of Central America, AISCA, proposes the construction and consolidation of a nearly 1,200-mile transmission line spanning Central America from Panama to Guatemala, costing an estimated $337 million. The AISCA is a series of proposed hydroelectric projects that reek of sprawling flood zones that could force the displacement of entire villages. Jorge Mario Sup, president of the Alliance for Life and Peace, a coalition of more than 27 campesino and indigenous organizations in Guatemala's Petén department, says that the dams are interconnected to the Plan Puebla Panamá and the CAFTA, infrastructure and free trade.
Si nos vienen a vender, pues necesitan infraestructura. Si viene, por ejemplo, vienen.
If they come to sell, they need infrastructure, right? For example, if they come with shipments of corn, then they will need airports, and then they will need roads to take the product to the final consumer. This is the Plan Puebla Panamá. That is where the dams enter, because in the PPP they call for networks of generators for electric energy. One of the cheapest ways to do this is with hydroelectric dams. In all of Central America this is contemplated. Not only Guatemala, much less is the Petén the only place where this is happening. So, all of this energy that is going to be generated is basically for two functions. One, the electricity will be generated for the large businesses that are going to move in once the campesinos have to migrate because they have been left to die. The other is to generate electricity to sell to the United States because they have had an energy deficit for the last 8 years and are depleting their energy reserves. So, they are not separate things, but rather one complements the other, and at the same time the CAFTA advances, the PPP moves forward. In fact, that is how it is.
There is a $405 million estimated budget to connect the AISCA to a proposed Guatemala-Mexico and Guatemala-Belize transmission line. President of the Petén Front Against Hydroelectric Dams in Guatemala's Petén Department, Faustino Chales, says that compensation for displaced communities is not prioritized. He says history has shown this.
There is a place in Mexico where they built a dam too, and the people were moved to the mountaintop, and there the power lines pass over the village, and they not have any electricity. So where is the benefit of the dams for us? They say it's for the benefit of the people, but then the electricity goes to other nations, and the people are left to live with candles in their houses. So the governments are not seeing that they will condemn their people, but all of the Central American countries are united in our struggle.
In a United States Trade Representative document released in December 2003, with the CAFTA, more than 80% of U.S. exports of consumer and industrial products to Central America will be duty-free immediately upon entry into force of the CAFTA agreement. All remaining tariffs will be eliminated within 10 years. In Nicaragua, Seforiano Cáceres Vaca, president of the Federation of Land, Cattle, and Agro-Industries Organizations, encompassing 537 cooperatives throughout the country, says that removing taxes does not come without a price. He says that the CAFTA and the Plan Puebla Panamá will undermine local autonomy.
La organización nuestra está en todo el país.
Our organization is all over the country, and there are cooperatives that will be directly affected by the mega projects and the PPP. Specifically in Mexico, Central America is obliged to perform a series of reforms within the legal framework of the Constitution as a condition for the implementation of these mega projects. So, the Central American countries are suffering from reforms that affect our environmental, forestry, transportation, energy, and communication laws. There is a complete reform within the judicial framework for those projects that will enable transnational capital. This reform frees the transnational capital from legal obstacles that help regulate the Plan Puebla Panamá.
According to a study by the Inter-American Development Bank for the Central American Diagnosis for the Plan Puebla Panamá, commissioned by Mexico's executive branch, the total necessary investment for the electrical sector in the Central American region for the next 10 years could be more than $7 billion. The Inter-American Development Bank and United States-based transnational corporations are at the forefront of the pack bidding on investments in this sector. The Inter-American Development Bank and United States-based transnational corporations are at the forefront of the pack bidding on investments in this sector. These investments include at least 330 hydroelectric dam projects currently in distinct phases of study, design, and construction within Central and Mesoamerica. Yet a spreading resistance is sprouting throughout Central America. Berta Cáceres from the Civic Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations, COPIN, in Honduras, says that the long struggle against the Tiger Dam project straddling the borders of Honduras and El Salvador will not advance despite violent repression against protesters.
Pero nosotros íbamos con la disposición de denunciar
We continue to denounce and investigate all that we can, but the government has denied us information. Never has the Honduran government held a plebiscite about the Tiger Dam. Never has it asked the people if they want their land to be flooded. Never has it said that it will pay something for this land. Never has it said where the people will go. And the huge interest to privatize the electrical sector in our country that is already in process is costing the Honduran people tremendously. And Honduras is one of the poorest countries in America, next to Nicaragua and Haiti. It is too much for us, and no, we are not in favor of this construction.
At a meeting of dozens of communities that came from hours away, Santiago Vasquez, a regional coordinator for COPIN, says certain international laws could be used to fight the mega projects.
Porque hay un marco de ley internacional que es el convenio 169.
There is an international law known as Treaty 169 in the International Labor Organization that says that we can defend our territory, because this treaty says that all parties interested in constructing or elaborating projects in indigenous zones must hold a preliminary plebiscite. That is to say, consult with us to see if we are in agreement. If we do agree, then they can do their project. If we do not agree, then they cannot do it. To date, this plebiscite has not been held, and so they are violating the International Treaty 169.
Despite the growing organization and resistance throughout Central America, Jorge Mario Soup says both the CAFTA and the Plan para Panama are cause for alarm. For decades, this region has been riddled by tumultuous civil wars, oppressive oligarchies, and heavy-handed international politics that have openly subverted democratically elected presidents.
The threat is serious because none of the resources will stay in Guatemala and the situation is going to get worse. Obviously, the corporations from other countries in some form have maintained their global economic power because they are taking the little that we have. If before it was gold that they looted, now they are interested in the oil, interested in nature, interested in the wealth that water can generate for them, and interested in the Guatemalan markets as well as the Central American region.
For Making Contact, I'm Tim Russo in Guatemala.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to Eric Klein for production assistance. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production, funded primarily by individual contributors. We're committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have suggestions for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or CD copy of the program CAFTA, The Cost of Free Trade, program number 2404, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Pauline Bartolone, associate producer, Susanna Hines, associate manager, Prashen McKee, office manager, Peggy Law, founding director, Norman Solomon, senior advisor, David Barsamian, national advisor, and I'm your host and director of production and training, Amy Pomerleau.